Chair.
If anyone in the present company can tell me who exactly can take advantage of the green ocean option, standard offer option, who would this be open to?
Anybody?
Anywhere?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Chair Hobbins, Representative Fink. I would like to talk about that. I also want to talk about how we see the competitive bid process working, because I'm always concerned about creating expectations and then not following through on it as it relates to the rate impact. So I wanted to do both those things so the committee members understand how we think we're going to do this. And let me start with that. When we go out to bid in September, I think it is, and we get the bids by the end of the year, and we're negotiating in January, February, March probably, we won't know. What we will know is what they've gotten for federal subsidies, because that's going to be in their RFP, and we're going to make sure they take advantage of everything that was available and that it's incorporated in their bid price. Okay, so that we'll know. When we enter the contract, we won't know whether we have any money from the leases, whether we have any money in the corridor, and whether we'll have any money from the ocean green power supply. So the way we would do it is we have to sign a firm price with the developer, or it does them no good. So they need to know what they're going to get. So we, depending on the bids, let's say it's the worst case scenario, and the bid prices come in at above market by, and it works out to the 1.5 mil cap. And by the way, we can do a cap that way. We can do a percentage cap any way we want to do it. So we would, you know, presumably everything else is, you know, they have the capability of doing it. They have the financial technical capability. They have they satisfy the economic test where they provide tangible benefits and that they do some of the development and the work in Maine. They satisfy all of that. The price that we get is sort of the market price plus 1.5 mils. And Representative Fletcher, you're exactly right. That's about $12 or $13-14 million a year. That would be the price tag. We would enter or direct the utilities, and it would probably be all three utilities, so the cost is spread over everyone, to enter into a contract based probably on their relative size, the three utilities' relative size. And so they would get that price. And okay, so if nothing happens, ratepayers are going to back up that 1.5 mils or that $10 to $12 million. But hopefully, you know, after we sign the contract, before it goes online, or even if it goes online, there'll be money from the leases and the rents and the corridor bill. And we would take that money and essentially transfer it to the utilities to reduce or eliminate the rate impact. So when you talk about what comes last, I'm a little confused. I don't want anybody to be confused that we're going to go in there with a possibility of the rate impact being the 1.5 mils, but no more. And hopefully these other measures will come in and lower or eliminate that rate impact. That's how functionally we see it going. As far as, and the green, the ocean green offer might be a way of further mitigating the rate impact. It's hard to tell whether there'd be any interest in that. But remember, what we're buying from the developer is energy capacity and their RECs. And we turn around and we sell the energy capacity and RECs at the market price for those three products. And presumably, we're not going to get as much money as we're paying, and that's a stranded cost. Right? But if we can take those RECs and market them, turn them into a product, you know, Maine Ocean Green Power product, it may be that people would be willing to pay more for that product than the REC would be on the market. Just, you know, it would just be people are willing to pay more. So what we would have is the regular price We'd have the regular green offer, which is any renewable, 100% renewables, which would be more. And then probably this wind ocean offer that, well, you know, you could buy all renewables or you could buy wind, it's a little bit more. And we would set the price based on what we would, you know, if we set it too high, nobody would buy it. If we set it too low, there's no point in doing it. And maybe people will buy it. Maybe the state will buy it. Maybe the university would buy it. And to the extent we can get more for it than the REC is worth on the open market, and the REC would be sold to satisfy portfolio requirements throughout New England, then there's some extra money to it. And it would be accomplishing your goal, Representative Fletcher, of having the people most interested in this power paying for it. But there should be no expectation we may not get anything from doing that. And we won't know for a couple of years, you know, at least. Well, we won't know until the project's up and running.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Tannenbaum, I think you answered my question, but the examples of potential users, consumers of these RECs would be not the RECs. People would be buying accepting the offer, buying the offer. The examples you gave, they all sounded like Mainers. I want to know if people outside of Maine who might be interested could have an opportunity to participate.
Well, there's sort of two products, and they're kind of the same, but you could say we're providing you a green supply.
Right.
And what that is regular electricity plus RECs.
So you have to be a consumer in Maine.
In Maine to buy the supply. But when we do the green supply, it really is going to be a REC overlay. You know, we don't actually buy green power, we buy the green RECs. Now, you could also have a product that is just the REC that people might be interested in other states buying. I haven't thought of that, but I don't see why not. But that maybe we could.
Have to be different if that was going to be enabled?
No, I don't think so, because, again, what we would be doing, the utility would be buying the energy capacity in RECs and put aside the green supply. They'd be turning around and selling it. So if they can sell the RECs, I mean, normally you sell the RECs to suppliers outside the state, but it's suppliers who need to satisfy portfolio requirement. But if, you know, universities in Massachusetts or Connecticut want to buy ocean RECs to show support for the concept, then the utilities can sell it to them. I don't think we need a statute for that. I think the statute already implies that the PUC could direct the utility to dispose of these products in any way that we see is in the public interest to do so.
Could it be possible for somebody seeking carbon offsets to fold this into their program along with planting trees in Ecuador?
Yeah, I don't really know enough about how carbon offsets work, but if they qualify, then that might add value to them.
Well, assuming we don't need to change the statute, I would certainly like the PUC to appreciate those opportunities when designing the program so that they're fashioned so that any such possibilities are enabled.
Yes, and one thing that we want to be very careful when we contract for RECs is to make sure that we're contracting for more than, quote, renewable energy credits, but we're contracting for all environmental attributes that may be created in the future. Because there was some disputes years ago when QF contracts were signed, there were no such things as RECs. And then RECs got created, and there was a dispute who owns the RECs, the generator or the utility that's buying the power. So we want to be careful that when we're buying the environmental attributes, we're getting every possible benefit that there is from buying that power. So if there are carbon offsets or the cap and trade or something down, or RECs go away and something else is created, especially over a 20-year contract, that we get that benefit. So, yeah, Representative, I'm sure we'll try our best to expand the universe of people who might be interested.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have anything? Mr. Tannenbaum? So we have all the language in front of us at this point.